Hail cheaters, and welcome to the OSG and Fantasy Premier League podcast. My name is Josh, and I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
I'm fine, Josh. Thanks for asking. Just waiting by the phone here, waiting to get the call from Chelsea that we will be a further extension of their massive American marketing campaign for Chelsea in the States.
We were part of the add-ons to that deal, right?
Yeah, Christian Pulisic and Always Cheating are coming as a package deal. Wow. Sort of like when you join the military. I think they have some deal in the military where if you're good friends with somebody and you join at the same time, they'll put you in the same platoon. No problem.
Do you remember when you had to, every American, when they reach 18, has to register for the draft? And do you remember, did you get a BIC Mach 3 when you did that? It was like a prize for registering for the draft?
I may have. I may have Vietnam. My parents were always talking about Vietnam for some reason in the household. Much like all baby boomers. And I was so terrified of the draft, even though I knew it was like 100% impossible that I would ever get drafted. But right. I blocked all that stuff out of my memory.
Brandon, we are through the holidays, through the festive fixtures. We saw an amazing match on Thursday, a match that you and I did a full media blackout for. It was amazing that it actually worked. And both of us.
It worked.
I had no idea. I genuinely had no idea what was happening. There were a couple of times I put the phone in airplane mode this game for anybody. Obviously, we're Americans recording this podcast in New York. Game was on at 3 p.m. on a Thursday. I'd been out of the office for like 12 days, since like the 20th of December. There was just no way I could take 2 hours in the middle of the afternoon and watch this game. So
You can play a Mesut Ozil and say you had back spasms.
Yeah, exactly. A phantom knee injury or something. I decided not to go that route. And so I did the airplane mode. And then at work, I just tried my best not to not to pop onto Twitter, which is like, it's like everyone. I don't know if you're like me, Brady, you have like a million tabs on your computer, yep. And I just absentmindedly I'm constantly opening the Twitter tab, and so I kept doing that.
You see the little number in parentheses and you have to see what that's all about. What
exactly.
Is this? What are the 238 new tweets that I've missed?
Exactly. So I did a full blackout, watched the match. It was obviously incredible. Leroy Sané too. I mean, it was a match that, like, it was really only once the match was over that I could even really think about the fantasy implications of it, because it was so, I think I mentioned this on Twitter a couple days ago, but it was a pure watch and a match with a ton of fantasy assets in it. I mean, obviously, virtually everybody has Mo Salah, but then you had this mix of, you have Sterling and you have Firmino, Robertson, TAA, like tons of fans. Like, most people had two or three players in that match, if not more. Sané really came through with that late goal. It was hard to even like celebrate. I don't know how I feel about my worry is still that like, not, I don't want to get too like off fantasy here. My worry is still that Liverpool is going to like really struggle to hold off Man City,
And so I was like, it will be devastating. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted that 7-point cushion, the 10-point cushion. Not that I don't like Man City, but I just, Liverpool's never won the title. Like the fans are so, it's a little bit like Leicester a couple of seasons ago where it's kind of hard not to get, kind of sucked into the excitement about it.
Definitely. Liverpool are kind of like Luke Skywalker going through the Death Star trench. We're very much, our breath is held and we're rooting for Salah to shoot the ball into the exhaust port of the Death Star and blow it up.
Exactly. And almost happened too. Yeah, never a huge save at the end.
I was actually really surprised. Just so the media blackout was a success for both of us. What I found actually harder than switching everything off prior to watching the match at home was not looking at my phone while watching the match. I'm so trained to follow live events on Twitter or just like look at my FPL team as the games are unfolding. So that was the huge challenge. So on top of that, you're not aware of how the BPS is playing out during the match. Just watching Sané play, I don't think he looked bad, but he was losing possession a lot, lots of misplaced passes. And firing up the bonus points after I watched the replay, I was kind of surprised to see he was on all three bonus.
Kind of easily, right? I mean, I guess he got the goal scoring, he got the game-winning goal bonus. But even then, I think he was a little ahead in bonus points. And I guess he didn't miss a lot of big chances. Aguero did. I think that was probably part of it. Aguero also lost possession a few times. So I think that was part of it. You know, Robertson ended up picking up in a bonus point too. I agree that there's a site called anewpla.net that I'm sure a lot of people use. And so obviously, you know, you can just use the site itself now to track bonus points, but it only gives you those sort of top players. And because I'm an obsessive nerd, I like to know where every single player, like all 11 players in both teams are in terms of bonus points. And I'm just like, I'm like every 7 minutes, I feel like I refresh that page and I go and I check in on everybody. So I felt the same way where I was like, God, I don't really know what's happening in fantasy right now. And I was even like, you know, Mo Salah at the end, you know, almost scores a goal. And I was like, well, how many, would he have gotten a bonus point if he's, I should just assume no when it comes to Mo Salah. But
he just wasn't on the ball all that much during that match. Yeah. Liverpool just really struggled to attack during the entire match.
Yeah, exactly. And not something I think we'll see much more from them this season, especially the way they played the last few weeks. But to bring it back to fantasy, so I get the Sané goal and then the three bonus points. I ended up finishing on 10 points from him. And it caps off what ends up being a really phenomenal festive weekend for me, or a festive, you know, 2 weeks or 3 weeks or however long that stretch is. I don't know when, you know, it technically starts, like game week 17
or something. It's a long time, Josh. It's a long time.
It's been a long time. So I finished on 56 points. And my overall rank, actually, I had a small red arrow, but I dropped to 9,001 in the world. I think I dropped like 130 spots. So obviously, you know, that just, I'm very happy to tread water once I'm sort of in the top 10K. You know, it's like once you get in, you just want to like do anything you can to stay in. You know, so it was a weird, incredibly unbalanced team for me this week, though. I had Sané, Aubameyang, and Kane, and that was it. I had those three players, and then I had eight blanks. I had one pointers from all four of my defenders. The double up on Patricio and Doherty was a massive failure. Again, second time in three game weeks that they lost a clean sheet after the 80th minute, which is just so brutal.
Somebody's out there loading these clean sheet points after the 60th minute when that's a no-no. You know, that's bad luck.
Quit loading those clean sheet points. Lucas Dean, a very disappointing one-pointer from him. It was one of those – it's not that I need him to, like, get goals and assists, but it would be nice if he occasionally could get a clean sheet too. You know, it's like his last clean sheet was back in game week 13 at home to Cardiff.
Jeez, so that's a long time ago.
It is a long time ago. Yeah, that is what that is. I don't have the date here. But I think that was back in November. So
easily.
Yeah. So that's a little frustrating. And then Trent Alexander-Arnold got a one pointer there. That one is fine. He actually created a bunch of chances. I thought he looked really good in that match.
There was some incredible chemistry between him and Robertson. Just launching the ball back and forth to each other.
Exactly. Yeah. He basically created the first goal.
He sure did. Yeah.
Yeah. So getting the one pointer for him wasn't too disappointing, but what was annoying is that Wan-Bissaka was my fifth defender. I think I just, you know, that was a case of having a little too much faith in Jimenez, or just, you know, I mean, this was coming right off, you know, Wolves winning 3-1 at Spurs. And I think I might have just been a little biased because of that match, you know, and maybe logically, you know, Wan-Bissaka should have been my third defender. So anyway, 56 points, though, is, you know, perfectly fine. You know, really, you know, delighted to be into the top 10K. Basically, I think when we started recording these Festive Fister podcast, I was around maybe 50. I'd fallen maybe to 50,000 in the world, something like that. Maybe it was, you know, 56,000. I'm looking back, 56,000 in game week 15. And then, you know, four out of five green arrows to get up to the top 10K. And that's where I've been the last two game weeks. So, so very, you know, very exciting. You know, getting Paul Pogba early was kind of the move that like really did it. And then keeping the faith of Sané was really important too. So I've actually got two transfers going into game week 22. And we'll talk about this a little bit later, but I'm thinking about making a very, like, just like holding firm at the team and making a very boring goalkeeper transfer. Let's table that for now. How was your game week, Brennan?
I had a great game week, 70 points, finished, I guess, 16 points above the game week average, captained Aubameyang, and he was my move this week, dropping Aguero for Aubameyang. Didn't know how, you know, of course, how the score was going to settle with the City-Liverpool match, and I thought, go for the safer option. I do like Aubameyang long-term here. We're going to talk much more about premium strikers in the heart of this podcast, so stay tuned for more there. Hongmin Son, speaking of the military draft, Josh, Hong Min-sun, about to play for South Korea in the Asian Cup. So we're going to have to say goodbye to him. But he was my Pogba-esque transfer during the festive period and has been great, scoring goals very consistently. And I think we all had to hang on to him for at least one more match for Manchester United. But 13 points from him. And then Fraser pops up with his monthly contribution to my fantasy team with a big 12-pointer. And Robertson with the assist. So 70 points. That brings me back up. I had fallen far. Coming into December, I was where you were, Josh. I was in the top 10K, somewhere between 6 and 9K. And around Christmas Eve, I dropped all the way down to 46K overall. Just had some really terrible transfer luck. And now I'm back to...
Still pretty good. I mean, you know, nothing to be... Yeah, but obviously, once you get into the top 10, you know, you shift your expectations, right? Once you get into the top 10K, you know?
Yeah, we did touch upon this last week, where it is kind of it is very contextual or relative depending on where you are. Obviously, if you're, you know, 150K overall, you died to get into the top 50K. So, you know, I'm not throwing shade there at anybody.
No,
but feels good to be on my third green arrow running and 16,933 overall in the world. And it feels overall like it was a challenging festive period, ultimately fulfilling, and I feel pretty fortunate to stay where I am.
Yeah, I think both of us feel that way. It's nice. It's a rare season when you and I are both having a good year. I think it makes it a lot easier to record the podcast. It's a lot easier for us to even text each other about matches.
we even go so far as to have fun with each other.
Exactly,
which is incredible.
It's a rare change. Yeah, it's a change in our friendship dynamic a little bit. We'll talk a little bit more about Gaming 22 in a minute. January transfer window. All right, just in a few words, Brandon, I'm going to list out four transfers, okay? And you can tell me if you're in or out on them, okay?
Okay.
And this can be over a longer, you know, let's say are you in on them like at any point in the second half of the season, right? Maybe not necessarily. Yep. You're looking to bring them in, you know, in the next game week. Dominic Solanke.
Got to say I'm out on this guy short term. He is priced 4.7. If Callum Wilson ends up making a move potentially to Chelsea, then my eyebrow raises a little bit because Bournemouth's attack is pretty sexy. We'll get to their defense in a moment, but 4.7 for a focal point on a really good attack. If it all pans out with the Wilson transfer, then maybe come February, March, we could be talking about it. What about you?
Yeah, very much out right now, obviously, because of the injury. He also lacks match fitness. So I don't know that he even is like a starting contender until March. I mean, the guy's only scored one goal in the Premier League, you know, his career. So, you know, but who knows? I mean, you know, someone like I'm forgetting his name right now.
Give me a hint.
The striker, the out-of-form striker for Liverpool.
Daniel Sturridge?
Daniel Sturridge, thank you. I don't know why. I talked about him like he was the most obscure player in the world. He's a very famous player.
Anyway, this guy.
The point is, Daniel Sturridge was a player who was kind of under the, like, when he first came into the league, he was like, he didn't really like come out of the gate super hot. I mean, obviously there's once he started to click with Suarez, but, you know, before that he was like a, you know, Chelsea striker. Well, I guess he was Man City, then Chelsea, and he was out on loan. And so, you know, I think, you know, it does take a while sometimes. These guys don't all burst out of the gate at 18 as, you know, premier players. So I think Solanke could be an interesting person, but yeah, probably more like we're looking at the 2019-20 season, you know, and I think it's safe to assume that Callum Wilson will probably be moving on to a bigger club, if not this January than you know, in the summer.
So the next transfer we want to talk about, Josh, is Nathaniel Klein, also Liverpool to Bournemouth. Bournemouth's defense is terrible, among the worst in the league, but here we have an established right back, cheap at 4.4 million, in, out.
Yep. Well, it's interesting. I mean, I'm not completely out. My instinct is to kind of just be out on all these players, just like out. He's been playing a little bit more. I think that's encouraging. I mean, he's played I guess he played four of the last five matches. Now, granted, he didn't get a ton of minutes, but the fact that he was even like had enough fitness to play any minutes, I think, is encouraging for him. So, I mean, the problem really is Bournemouth's defense is okay. So obviously, you know, Bournemouth's defense isn't good. They bring in a good defender. Does that suddenly make their defense better? I don't
know.
The issue is that they're kind of like a mini Man City in a way. Like they
go on.
Well, this is the, you know, they really, I don't actually have possession stats. My instinct is that they control possession a fair amount in most of the matches. Obviously, when they're playing one of the bigger players in the one of the bigger teams, they probably don't. But like, you know, in a like they're like a mid-table version of that, where it's like when they're playing a lesser team, they control the possession, they've got the ball a lot, but they do sort of open themselves up to the break a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. They're not a team that's going to scrap out a bunch of 1-0 wins, right? Their goal is to. This is why they're so fun to watch, right? This is why everybody kind of likes Bournemouth. You know, so I just think that opens, as much like Man City, that kind of attacking style does open you up to counterattacking goals. And I feel like that's, I don't know, you know, honestly, I just haven't liked, I just don't like Bournemouth's defense. I don't trust it. I also don't think they're very good on set pieces. Obviously, Nathaniel Klein's not going to help with that.
My favorite part about this Nathaniel Klein story is Neil Warnock absolutely losing his mind.
Oh, and he saying, is just out of he's a disgrace. Yeah. Warnock, yeah, give me a break, Warnock. Like this is like he did the same thing last year with Nuno when they like celebrated on the pitch after they won a big match against them or something. He's like it's a disgrace. Like it's just calm down, dude. Like this is, you know. Give it a rest.
Who's next? Who's the next big transfer in the January window?
Yeah, Jason Puncheon to Huddersfield.
So everyone kind of got a little excited when this was announced late last week, and that he is 4.2, big make weight, fifth midfielder. Particularly with Aaron Moy having injury troubles, you could see Puncheon stepping in and filling a similar role. The issue is, we haven't seen much from Jason Puncheon in seasons, and he's out of form. And Huddersfield are also terrible, and they're going down. So, this is from someone who has Phil Billing, another Huddersfield midfielder, as his fifth midfielder. Yeah. But that doesn't fill me with great confidence and joy. So Puncheon is not an improvement.
He's only 5 years removed from a 7-goal season. So, you know, think about that. It's only been 60 months since he last had 7 goals in a year.
His famous butt wipe goal celebration.
I think it was around that time. I can't remember. Was he always with Palace? Was he at Southampton? Was that
when he was on Southampton? Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Why not? Right. I mean, how often do you play? I mean, I know some people play five through the middle. I don't. And, 4.2. I mean, they wouldn't bring him in if they weren't going to play him, right? It's not like Huddersfield have this like overabundance of attacking midfielders who just absolutely need to play, right? I mean, outside of Philip Billing, I feel like you could just kind of bring him in over any. I mean, they're going down, you know. It's like they might as well.
This is shades of the documentary everyone is talking about, Sunderland Till I Die, and they talk about the transfer window in this documentary. Of the problem is, We could buy some players. The problem is no one wants to come here because our club is toxic. We're going down. What does that mean for your career if you're coming here? And there's no reason for these guys to move. And Jason Puncheon just smacks of that kind of transfer of the guy whose career is effectively over. But if there's a whiff of a starting spot, he's going to go. I don't think it improves the team at all.
I mean, you know, I don't really want to have Philip Billing, and he's only 0.3 million more, you know, so I don't know. I mean, it just depends on how much, like how important that 0.3 is for you and how much you're going to stretch it. I mean, you know, honestly, I think it's a reasonable thing. If I was wildcarding, I'd probably bring Puncheon in, right? I mean, stick him in that fifth slot, you know, I mean, how many points are you really going to get out of that slot anyway? I mean, he's an attacking player. He's scored more than 5 goals. He scored 5 or more goals, I think, 3 times in his career, maybe 4. So, I mean, you know, they need someone like him. I think it's like, it's fine. I mean, it's not, I don't think you're going to win your mini league because of him, but he's like a decent enabler. So sure, why not?
Yeah. Last thing you can say is if you're playing 4 max midfielders, really what you're looking for in your fifth mid spot is just somebody who plays, someone who's probably going to be 2 points every week. So if that's your style, then punching is cool.
Final one, Samir Nasri to West Ham. Now, you've already transferred him in. So tell us a little bit more about that, Brandon.
Well, to burn four on Samir Nasri, some people would say that's rash, but I just say that's good FPL management. And, you know, you're what, like 7,000 places higher than me? If I want to make up ground, I think Nasri is really the only way I can do that. Yeah, you really need Nasri. Yeah, he played 58 minutes against Birmingham City in the FA Cup, so he's hitting the ground running. But, I mean, throw this guy in the same garbage bin with Jack. What's his name? Jack Wilshere.
Yeah, exactly. It's West Ham is the perfect place for him right now. West Ham is where every player who like just can't find a home. It's like the English. Well, I mean, I guess he's French. I don't know. It's like a lot. Of, well, I was saying there reminds me of Stoke City connection a little bit. There is the Pellegrini connection. That's true. It reminded me a little bit of Stoke in the last couple seasons where they were like, sure, you can't. It's not working out somewhere else. Like, just come to Stoke. Like, come hang out here for a while. I mean, 5.5 million. And we were obviously joking about you bringing him in. I mean, that's like a million more than he should be, right? I mean, at 4.5 million, I guess I would maybe consider him. At 5.5 million, he will never be in my team. I would certainly never advocate for anyone bringing him in. I mean, this is just like, it's like just a classic example of like a player who's famous. You know, it's like he's like, I guarantee you there are players on plenty of other clubs that are going to produce like in that price bracket are going to produce many, many more points than he is at 5.5 million. Yeah. I mean, David Brooks is probably going to outscore. David Brooks is 0.5 million cheaper, probably outscore him by 40 points this season.
Yeah. It's a good point. I mean, Nasri was a great player at Arsenal and had some great moments in Manchester City, but really the only upside here with FPL this season at West Ham is, can he help Arnautovic, assuming he stays healthy or can get really healthy? And how does he impact Felipe Anderson? Because those are the only two West Ham attackers you should even be considering at this point.
That's true. Yeah. Yes. The Snodgrass moment was fun, and now it's over.
It was all too short. Okay. Speaking of fun, let's jump to the always cheating Super League. 5,000 plus managers strong. I think we crested 5,500 managers in the Super League now. Never too late to join, but we'll just run down the top 10 real quick. Starting at the bottom in 10th place, Dima Chernik. In 9th place, Marin Vulicic. 8th place, Alex Suarez. 7th, Steve Kuhl. Martin Ewer in 6th place. 5th place, it's Matthew Shannon. 4th place, Fabio Borges. Moving up to 3rd place, it's Chris McCartney and Jason Mann in 2nd place. New number 1, Miroslav Pujic. Josh, Miroslav is having a great season, is he not?
Yes, he is. He's ranked number 3 in the world overall. That is so fantastic. Congratulations to you, Miroslav. In fact, everyone in the top 5 of the Super League is ranked in the top 100 in the world. And Alex Suarez just became a Patreon supporter. So thank you to Alex. That is very cool. You know, I like that the idea that you crack the top 10 and you still need the Always Cheating podcast. You know,
you didn't just go off and start your own podcast.
Yeah. You don't crack the top 10 and then immediately cancel all your Patreon subscriptions. You're like, I don't need this anymore. I'm here. Yeah. I got where I wanted. Thank you to Alex. In fact, let's talk just very briefly about Patreon here, Brandon. I don't want to get into full December pledge drive mode here, but I do want to do a couple quick thank yous. I want to thank we have several new Patreons just in the last week. I think a lot of people like took the like new year, new support the podcast idea to heart. So we have Babas Kuhn, Tor Forland, Jeff Husby, Ben Grant, and James Holland. Those are all new producer level patrons. We have a new Lord Sorloth patron who is Mark Bell. And then we have a few new Mbakani patrons as well. That's Shiv Sukumar, Michael Judson, Alex Suarez, and Tobias Johnson. And Brandon, as we started recording this podcast, we have a new patron.
My God.
Samarth Rangavatal has just become a new Lord Sorloth patron. This is happening in real time, Brandon. Thank you to everybody. I want to note that we started a new, it's either going to be weekly or biweekly, depending on how, you know, we'll see how it goes, but it's a new podcast specifically to answer basically to answer questions from patrons. We're calling it the kitchen table sessions because most of the time we'll be recording it on our kitchen tables once our family has gone to sleep. We did the first one. There's solo podcasts. This is gonna be either me or Brandon. And the first one with me came out on Friday night. And I go on for about 40 minutes. If you want to hear me answer a question from Tom Campbell about goalkeepers and then immediately start talking about whether David Luiz can cover Marcus Alonso in terms of fantasy assets, then you should go listen to that. And you're planning to record one this coming Thursday, right? So
we'll be putting out the call to our patrons sometime on Wednesday or Thursday morning for your questions. But yeah, there is, if you're a patron or soon to be patron, there's a new RSS feed that you can drop into any podcast app that you use, and it's an exclusive supporter feed where you get all the regular podcasts, all our kitchen table sessions and everything. So it's just a great streamlined way now for you to get all those exclusive supporter podcasts.
Yep, exactly. And then we have also another podcast, an exclusive podcast coming up. We're doing our first ever Patreon book club, and it's for a book called The Italian Job, which is a comparison of English and Italian football cultures. It was written by Gianluca Vialli. It actually comes up in this Michael Cox book that I read last month. And we're doing this in tribute to producer Rafe Khan, who wanted us to do a podcast about Italian football. So we're excited to do that. And if you want to support the podcast or get access to these pods and mini leagues and all the other contests that we're doing, go to patreon.com/alwayscheating.
Excellent, Josh. I think it's a good time to take a break. We're going to come back, and the theme this week is attack, 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 like we're Manchester United fans. We're going to talk about premium striker dilemmas and all of the big attacking assets that seem kind of fluid right now from Liverpool, City, Spurs, etc. So we'll be right back.
All right, Brandon, we're back. This week's theme, as you just mentioned, attack, attack, attack. Let's talk first about the premium striker dilemma. This feels like this is a very hot topic. I feel like this is something that a lot of people are debating, which is basically, do you want to have any premium strikers? Do you want to have one? Do you want to have two? Can you find a 7 million striker that covers an 11 million one? So first question is from FPL Chancer. Says, I've generally got away with no premium strikers this season, preferring a heavy midfield. However, I was punished badly by Aubameyang and Kane in game weeks 18 and 21. Is it time to accept that we need one big hitter up top, regardless of midfield value? Then Emma FPL says she's also eyeing Aguero as an alternative. So what do you think? How many premium strikers do you have in your team right now? You have just one, right? Just Aubameyang?
Yeah, just one. Aubameyang alongside Rashford and Jimenez. Rashford has turned into a really good pick, but he's certainly not a premium striker. He's just like a really great value striker at around 7 million. Yeah. My personal feeling is, looking at what Kane and Aubameyang are doing right now, you have to have at least one of them. I'm not sure if you can say you ideally have just one or you ideally have just both, because I think there you have to have the discussion of how it's impacting your premium assets in the midfield, which you right. have both Kane and Aubameyang, so you can speak to that. But real quick,
I have Kane, Aubameyang, and Salah, which is like so much money tied up in those three players.
It's an incredible amount of money, so you really do have to think about it. But just looking at what it comes down to for me is the consistency of the returns. And FPL is about goals and clean sheets. Marginally, it's about assists. And for just you, Josh, it's all about bonus points. I understand that. But it's about goals. And Aubameyang and Kane are leading the way. They're scoring them. I feel like you got to have one of these guys. Is Aguero an alternative? Speaking to Emma's question, it kind of remains to be seen. And Jesus being healthy was an issue for Aguero at the start of last season. We saw some rotation. There was no rotation at the start of the season, but Jesus was not healthy, exhausted, and severely out of form. Pep is using Jesus again, and I just have concerns about Aguero's form coming back from his little injury and what's going on with that rotation there. So I'm all focused on Obs and Kane right now.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I just don't really trust him in general, just as a fantasy asset. I mean, he's,
Aguero, you're talking about?
Aguero, yeah. I feel like he costs he costs, you know, as much, well, he costs as much as Aubameyang. He's a, I guess he's a little cheaper than Harry Kane by about a million. He's 11.2 million. Yeah, so he has this, you know, this massive return in game week two, right? He scores 20 points at home to Huddersfield in game week two. Now, Huddersfield's not coming back to Man City this season, Brendan. So sadly, he hasn't been as strong on the road, has not had a double-digit return since game week 11, and in fact, only has two double-digit returns on the season. You know, that to me points to a player who just isn't very captainable, right? I mean, if you compare his, I don't want to go through all the other players, but I you know, I'm certain that Aubameyang, Kane, and Salah all have, you know, many more double digit returns than he does, right? In fact, Aubameyang in particular is like a player who is just like, you know, super explosive, like sort of when he's in form. Okay, now I can't resist looking. He has four double digit returns, and he had nine in the last game week, right? The famous goal assist, no bonus point, home match to Fulham. Mm-hmm. Everyone was so like mad about him not getting, like, I was like, it's whatever. It is what it is. You know, like he missed a lot of big chances, but he got 9 points. Perfectly fine. Like, it's a good return. He was on 2 points in the 80th minute. Like, it was amazing.
Yeah.
So
just pretend like he didn't get an assist, and that assist is your 3 bonus points, and just live in denial. I think that's the only way I get out of bed these days.
Yeah. I mean, there was, you know, the moment at the end of Man City Liverpool where, you know, Aguero was like, just dead, basically, right? Like, he wanted to be subbed.
Him and company couldn't... were both waving their arms like, no, take me off. No, take me.
Exactly. So that, to me, points to a player who's just, yeah, okay, obviously this is they're not going to be playing Liverpool at home that often, right? It's a super difficult match. It requires a lot of stamina, right? He needs Delta to be very high in that match, Brandon.
Yeah.
So, but you know, to get back to my original point, I don't see him as a player who you can captain very often, or who I would trust to captain very often. And if you have an 11 million player that you don't trust to captain, I just don't think you can. I just don't think you want that, right? I mean, I think you'd rather Aubameyang, Kane, and Salah are three players who I would captain in most game weeks, right? I mean, maybe not Aubameyang plays away to Man City in 4 game weeks, right? Okay, I wouldn't captain in that one, but I'd probably captain in virtually every other match, or I wouldn't be shy about it at least.
Yeah. Another thing with Aguero too is looking at their midfield options. We have a couple of questions about City's midfield. One coming from Red Dagger on our Slack. Can we get City mids back now, please? Having dumped both Sterling and Sané last week for Hazard and Pogba, which ones would you go with? Also, Rob Pick asks, have people moved away from Sterling and Sané too quickly? And we're talking about Spurs with Kane. We're talking about Arsenal with Aubameyang. You could argue you kind of only need one of these guys from each team, particularly when you've got guys consistently scoring like that. So if you're looking at Sané and Sterling as consistently returning offensively for City, Aguero just feels surplus to requirements.
Yeah. I have 5 very expensive players in my attack right now. I have Salah, Sané, Pogba, Kane, and Aubameyang. And then I have Brooks as my 4th midfielder. I've got Jimenez as my 3rd. Like, I feel like if I were wildcarding right now, this is the team I'd want, like, pretty close to it, you know? The whole thing, though, hinges on whether I can get points out of Matt Doherty and Lucas Dean, right? And Trent Alexander-Arnold, I guess. If those three can offer me anywhere close to consistent returns, all three of them, very inexpensive. And then Wan-Bissaka too, right? So if I just think, you know, with clean sheets being kind of dead right now, like, if I can just get something out of those players, then it's okay, you know? And if I can't, then I'm going to have to start rejiggering that attack to put more money into the defense. And I just don't know right now. I mean, I don't know if I can, if it's going to work, because just Wolverhampton are not keeping clean sheets, and it's fine as long as, you know, Matt D can pick up the occasional goal, you know, but he has one, you know, no goals and one assist in the last 5 game weeks. You know, they did pick up a clean sheet at home to Bournemouth. You know, he did pick up the assist away to Spurs. I mean, it's fine to start him. Like, there's at least a chance that he ends up playing this game week away to Manchester City. And I'm kind of okay with that. Like, I could see him getting some kind of attacking return in that game. And they have this great run of fixtures. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, like, but don't you see this as like a, the conversation is joined in my head. It's not really about the midfield to me. It's about the defense and whether, you know, I don't think if I have a premium attacker, it's because I'm taking money out of my defense to pay for them. It's not because I'm taking money out of my midfield.
Okay. Well, so, so it seems like the, for the purposes of this dilemma, it sounds to me like looking at Chancellor's question, Emma's question, FPL Queen also had the same question. The question is, how big do you go up front? Are you getting both Aubameyang and Kane as you have? And the, listen to you talk, if you're going for two premium strikers, you're making compromises, noticeable compromises, particularly in your defense, maybe in your midfield. So the answer to the question is probably you need at least one. And going with just one of these premium strikers and Kane or Abba, maybe Aguero, if you're looking for some kind of differential, that leaves you enough flexibility on the rest of your team. If you go big with two premium strikers, you're gambling and you're going to have to make compromises, and only time will tell. So that's kind of where we land on this one.
If we're debating Kane versus Aubameyang now, let's say we remove Aguero from the conversation. If it's just Kane versus Aubameyang, which one do you prefer? I mean, I guess you sort of made this choice of bringing in Aubameyang. Are you still, do you still feel like he's the preferred option going forward?
Yeah, I shot my shot with Aubameyang, and I had some long-term questions with Kane, and I think I'm a little too twitchy with Heung-Min Son, and Son departing for the Asian Cup, what is that going to do for Spurs while he's away? Is that going to diminish their attacking potential? And while I'm thinking about this, you're also seeing the ascent of Christian Eriksen, and maybe Eriksen is actually coming into good enough form where he can keep that midfield pumping and keep Kane with supplied with enough balls for him to score.
Four goals and one assist in his last five matches.
I know. So I'm less down on Kane than I was when I was really debating the transfer with Kane and Aubameyang. And you look at Arsenal, they have two really tricky fixtures in game weeks 23 and 25 with Chelsea and City, and that City match is at the Etihad, which makes it even more daunting. On top of that, Arsenal against Fulham, their midfield is evaporated before our very eyes. They're just playing three defensive midfielders. You've got Guendouzi and Xhaka and Torreira all playing. So they both, between Spurs and Arsenal, they both have doubts. But that said, there are just huge upsides with both of these strikers. They're both running for the Golden Boot. I'm not fearful of.
I feel like you haven't answered the question. If you were on a wild card right now and you had to pick one or two, one of the two, which one would you pick?
Okay, just, so can I
just pick one?
I'll put Kane first. First, but if you're talking about budget and saving that million for Aubameyang, I wouldn't hesitate. Mm-hmm. Go for Aubameyang if it makes the rest of your squad better.
That's an answer with an effective hedge. I think I agree with you there. I think it is okay to have two. I think that, I mean, you know, there's a lot of different ways you can do it this year. I think you could get away with none, you know, two. I don't want to do that because I really feel like Salah, Aubameyang, Kane are in I think they are very conscious of the Golden Boot rates that's taking place this year. I mean, even their managers, I feel like, are talking about how much they're like, how important it is to score, how much they want to do it. And I mean, obviously, it may take a back seat for Liverpool considering that they're chasing the title. But I think, you know, if it's going to be a two team race near the end, then it could just be Kane and Aubameyang just going at each other, trying to score as many goals as they can down the stretch. You know, I mean, obviously Spurs aren't that far off the lead right now. So I think that, I don't know. I just feel like, I mean, you're right. I mean, the Son leaving could definitely affect Kane a little bit, although Kane doesn't need a lot of, I mean, we saw this actually at the end of the Cardiff match, right? I mean, a bunch of chances. He really could have scored an extra goal or picked up an assist in the last 20 minutes of that game after Son went off. So I think that, I mean, we took him, what, 30 seconds to score in the FA Cup match on Friday. Oh, jeez,
don't even, I can't even talk about that. What a complete joke.
But, you know, so I think that if there are two strikers in the Premier League and both of them are likely to score more than 25 goals this season, which seems extremely likely given that we have, Kane is on. He's on 14 and Aubameyang is on. Is Aubameyang on 14 as well? I think he is.
Maybe. Yeah.
So they're both on 14 goals this season. They both have, 17 matches left. I would expect both of them to get 10 or more goals, you know, throughout the rest of the season. So I don't know. I think it's, you know, I think that you definitely want at least one. I think that I have two and I'm planning to stay that way. There's a chance that I move Aubameyang to Firmino at some point. Mm-hmm. I can't do that before an away match at West Ham. I just to me, this is just a captainable match for Aubameyang.
Yeah.
I feel like we're just talking in circles now. I think we're kind of in agreement. Yep.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about Liverpool in a second, but let's round out the Manchester City chat. We mentioned Red Dagger and Rob Pick with their questions about City midfield in an attacking sense. You still have Sané. I dropped Sterling for Hazard, but the trend over the last couple of weeks is aligning with Manchester City's dip in form, as we've all tossed these assets that seemed like must-haves a month or two ago. How are you feeling about the City midfield right now? Sané feels like undroppable for you right now?
Yeah, it kind of does. I mean, I don't know why. I mean, scored again today. You know, he was rested. Then he came on, you know, with about 30 minutes left and scored in the match. I mean, he's 9.5 million. He's 9.9% ownership. So it's kind of a unique chance to have to be in the top 10K and have a player that's kind of a differential.
Yeah.
And they have three great fixtures coming up. They do play in the they have a League Cup match at midweek. He's probably going to start in that. But they are playing Burton Albion. So I can't imagine he's going to play 90 super hard minutes in that match. I mean, you know, maybe he plays 60 and comes off. So, you know, I expect him to start this weekend. And then they play. So it's Wolves at home, Huddersfield away. I mean, Huddersfield away on game week 23. You know, it's just a huge fixture for Man City last season. You know, the Champions League doesn't start up for another, you know, what, month and a half or so. So, you know, until Ben Mendy comes back, I just feel like he's been rested a fair amount, right? He got rested just a week or so ago in game week 20. He got rested today. I just really like him as an option. I mean, what do you think about Leroy Sané?
I think he's great. I moved off Sterling to jump on the Hazard train.
Hazard. First time he's come up in this podcast.
That's a whole other podcast. I'm not sure he fits into the attack discussion, Hazard, at this point. I'm not sure he's doing much attacking. I can't tell. But if I were to turn Hazard back into a Man City midfielder, I would go for Leroy Sané. You know, it's really a fool's errand to try to predict between Sterling and Sané who's going to haul week to week.
Sure.
Their performance against Liverpool shows that their heart is in this title challenge and that they... Yeah, it was a 2-1 scoreline, and it wasn't pretty at times, but they can attack and they will attack. And I think Pep just is all in on Sané right now, at least up until the end of February, assuming Mendy keeps that course to come back from injury at that point. But he's going to play virtually every Premier League game, if I had to predict.
I mean, this guy just played, you know, arguably a man of the match level, or one of the, you know, certainly worthy of a man of the match award, you know, at home to Liverpool, right? Biggest match of the season, scores a game winning goal. So, you know, the concerns about his flightiness, I think, have maybe been put to rest a little bit. I just think that I think there's always this worry about him is like, is he really stable in that team? I think he is at least going forward. So yeah, I'm really excited to have him in my squad. I mean, I don't have Eden Hazard. I am a little nervous about that going into this weekend, you know. I mean, at home to Newcastle, I could definitely see him doing well in that match, but you've got to sacrifice something. I mean, you know, we talk about all of these massive assets. I don't have Marcus Rashford either. And I wish that I did, you know, and you can't have everybody. And so you just have to decide what combination is the best, you know, what if there's maybe 10 players that are like super potentially explosive assets, you know, which five of those 10 do you most want? And I feel like right now I've got the combination I want. But you know, that stuff can change too. I mean, I may feel differently in 2 weeks, you know, or someone's going to get a hamstring injury or something, you know, anyway.
a quick note of compassion and solidarity with all those Hazard owners out there. We have to be in it for the long haul. You said, Josh, he's got a really good
season keeper for you, right?
Yeah, I mean, when we were talking about Hazard a couple weeks ago, and we were both sort of staying away from him because you can't manage a Hazard pick week to week. He's just only going to work for you across the season. So
right.
I jumped in, and I have to see how it goes. I have to see how it goes in the long term. And yeah, just give it a couple of more weeks, and don't panic.
He's got some big matches coming up too. I mean, home to Huddersfield, home to Brighton. Sarri never rotates, so feels like he's going to be pretty stable on that team too.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, you wonder if he might wear down a little bit, which is something that has happened to him in the past. But
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, it's got to be frustrating that it's blanks. I mean, obviously, you know, he had huge chances in both those matches. Honestly, you do wonder. I mean, part of it could be that, you know, it's a positional thing a little bit too. I mean, you know, you can bemoan him not, you know, how unlucky he got not to convert those chances, but maybe a player who's an actual polished striker does finish those chances off.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, look at the angle that Aguero found to score the first goal in the Man City-Liverpool match, right? That's what now I don't mean to compare Hazard to Aguero, they're very different players, but like, you know, an experienced striker knows where to put it, you know?
Well,
I mean,
yeah, yeah.
I think Aubameyang probably converts those chances too.
I do agree with you there, but let's be clear that I don't know that there's anyone on Chelsea that's playing handy little balls like that into Hazard when he's in that position.
Right.
So
he needs two Hazards. He needs one Hazard to play yeah, the other Hazard right, at the right. ball.
All right, let's move on to right. Liverpool. Yep. MJB86 is asking about Liverpool on brand attack, attack, attack. Mm-hmm. Liverpool double up. We're looking at Salah and Firmino, maybe Salah plus Mane. Awesome fixtures for yep. the rest of the season. Jeremiah Johnson on our Slack put it in a very interesting way, which we can help guide our conversation. Jeremiah says, up to this point, Liverpool have played a strategy of very tight defense and not an all-out attack, making hindsight to the first half of the season look like a double up on Liverpool defense plus Salah was the way to go. But here's where things are changing moving forward. Do you think that we still need to look at it that way? Or maybe yeah. we just double up on Liverpool offense, thinking they're going to press a little more and try to score more goals here with the run-in?
Well, I am considering Firmino. I mean, there's kind of like we had a podcast we did a long time ago with Richard Orford, Brandon. It was like one of the first Patreon podcasts we did. And he said, you know, a good rule of thumb is to it's just like a good, like, I think we all feel this way, or we all instinctively try to keep this in mind, which is if you have, you know, defenders that are playing more like midfielders, those are players you want. If you have midfielders that are playing more like forwards, you know, like Salah is this season, you could argue that, you know, Doherty is playing kind of like a defender, plays sort of like a midfielder too. He's so attacking, you know, those are the kind of players you want. My concern with Firmino is he's a forward who's playing as a midfielder.
Yeah.
And is that, I mean, obviously they play like kind of a front three, but he's sort of ceded the forward space to Mo Salah. So do I want to spend 9.2 million for a forward who is kind of doing what Harry Kane has done a lot this season, which is to drop back, you know, play as a central midfielder, basically, you know, link up the play, try to play through balls to Firmino and Salah. You know, I mean, Firmino's numbers in aggregate on the season are actually not that bad. It feels that way because he's never really been a prime FPL asset, you know, but he's got 8 goals and 5 assists in the season. His ownership has actually ticked up to 17%, which is a lot higher than I realized. Doesn't seem high to you?
I think it probably is high going into game week 22. I do wonder if that's inflated with inactive teams who brought him in at the very start of the season.
Yeah, but it's surprising that he had a hat trick in game week 20, and his own, he didn't even drop. He didn't go up one, like even 0.1 after that.
Yeah,
You know, if anything, he actually dropped 70,000 after that, which is very strange.
That is peculiar. I wonder if that's people.
Actually, no, that might have been going into that game week. Sorry.
Right.
Anyway, go ahead.
I think people are just really realizing the necessity of Mo Salah right now, and that's the priority, and probably taking a bit of the attention away from Firmino. Yeah. I agree with you in that there is both with Mane and Firmino, that it's just not consistent enough. Whereas Liverpool's defense, I think, will continue to be the best defense in the league throughout the rest of the season. And
yeah,
clean sheets, we can bank on them. What I'm trying to figure out right now is not to go for Firmino or Mane. It's to go for Trent or Alisson for a Liverpool defensive double up. I am targeting the Liverpool defensive double pretty hard, and it's going to be happening for me in the next 2 to 3 weeks for sure.
Yeah, I think that is a great way to go. I mean, at 5.2 million, Trent represents great value still. When you look ahead to so the thing about Liverpool is I do think that we'll see a lot of rotation in about 10 weeks' time, right? Like when they're like, assuming that they are still in the thick of it in the Champions League, if they make a run in the FA Cup, things like that. But I think until like the middle of March or so, especially with Gomez still out, I think that, you know, Trent's going to have a nice long run and the fixtures look very good for Liverpool. So I'm with you there. I mean, I would like to bring in Alisson. I don't know how I would do it right now, but I would love to have Alisson in my squad.
Yeah, and with Klein going out, and Gomez injured throughout the rest of January, there's no one else to play in that position where Trent is. So he looks really, really solid. All right, so Spurs will round out our attack discussion. Tacoma Toffee, Eriksen to cover Tottenham during Son's absence. Also, FPL Aardvark chimes in, who is the chosen one to replace the mighty Son? I saw you responded to somebody on the Hail Cheaters Twitter account, Josh, somebody asking, should I just hang on to Son through the Asian Cup? Mm-hmm. What was your response?
Don't do that. Yeah, you can't. He's too expensive. And I mean, he's like, you know, it's like your second or third most expensive midfielder. You know, you can't hold him for how many weeks is it going to be? It's going to be at least what, 3 or 4 game weeks.
Yeah.
You know, just bring him back when he comes back. You know, that seems perfectly reasonable. I don't know. What about Eriksen though?
I'm not really keen on Eriksen. He's just too, for what I expect. I mean, you mentioned his form a couple minutes ago, but for what you're going to expect from him, 9+ million is too expensive, particularly when you've got Harry Kane, who's in form. If you want to target anyone in the Spurs attack, I just think it's Harry Kane or nobody right now.
Yeah, I kind of with you there. I mean, you know, Paul Pogba is a million cheaper than Eriksen, and I feel like he kind of is playing. I don't know. I mean, I guess we'll see how this injury affects him. I think he'll be fine. I'm not too worried about this injury. But if they're playing like Huddersfield at home, I might be worried. But because they're playing Spurs away, I can't imagine he's not going to play in this match. Yeah. You know, so yeah, I just feel like that's where I would be. I'd be looking at Pogba. I'd be looking at Sané. I mean, if it was a straight swap between, if you had, let's say, you had a million to spare and you were swapping Son out, so I would rather go Son to Sané than I would Son to Eriksen.
Yeah, no, yeah, totally agree. 100%. Just on Pogba, I saw the news. This will probably be outdated by tomorrow, but the team, United's first team, flew to Dubai for some warm weather training, and Pogba did not travel, but there was some rumor that he'll be joining them in Dubai, or he's getting set for the weekend's match.
I think the club even clarified that he will be joining them later this week. Yeah, so okay. I think he'll play. I mean, you know, he was able to play the rest of that match, you know, after the tackles from Jonjo Shelvey. Oh, Jonjo. All right, Brandon, let's take a quick break and we're going to get back and we're going to do a quick lightning round and talk about game week 22.
It's 2019. It is a new year. New year, Josh. New games. It's your time to try Starting 11. Starting 11 is a live Premier League fantasy app that you can play for free or cash prizes on your phone. If you have an iOS or Android device, you can play Starting 11 now. Play it any day in which
what else are there? If you don't have an iOS or Android, what kind of phone do you have? Am I being snobbish?
What's
here?
The Zune operating system? I don't know. Yes, basically,
it's just those two, right?
If you have a Motorola Razr, you might be out of luck. But listen, Starting 11 is a game for the future. So get hit to the times. Download the app from the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store. Here's how you play. Any day there are two or more Premier League matches, Josh, you can pick your best 11-man squad. You're starting from scratch. You have no budgetary restrictions. You jump into a competition in which you can play for cash, or you can challenge your friends to play that day. Or now you can join mini leagues. Starting 11 has set up mini leagues that you can join, or you can start your own mini league with friends. And that's a great way to play over numerous days and keep track of who's doing what throughout the course of the season.
Yep, it's just one thing that's really nice about it too. I mean, not only can you play for cash, which is just very personally thrilling to me because I do love to gamble. I think I've talked about that a couple thousand times in this podcast. But I also think it is another way to reassess some fantasy assets. It's just there's something about having a player in your squad that I think makes you sort of track them more closely in a game. You know, it's like no one really watches offensive line play in the NFL. You know, it's like it's hard to really focus on a midfielder that you might want to target for your team until you actually have them in your squad and feel more invested in them. So, you know, if you want to just try out Starting 11, see if it's for you, maybe that's one perspective. It's just like, how do I have fresh eyes when I evaluate some of these fantasy assets?
Outstanding. So yeah, download the Starting 11 app. Cash games are live in the UK, US, Canada, and Germany for your iPhone. If you have an Android, cash games are live in the UK, or just pick up and play the app for free wherever you are. Visit starting11.io for more details and helpful video tutorials on how to get the most out of the app. Josh, don't waste your time and money gambling on things you don't understand. This game is just like FPL. Be smart, participate in a game that you do understand.
Brandon, we're back. Lightning round, a short lightning round this week. Really, I promise, we are actually short this time. First question. All answers are 30 seconds or less, Brian. We've never broken this rule. We never plan to.
Not this
FPL
year, anyway.
Ant says, not this year. Not in 2019. FPL Ant says, who is the best replacement for Danny Ings? Is it Ashley Barnes?
This question kind of makes my tummy rumble a little bit. It makes me uncomfortable. Got a couple of interesting suggestions from FPL Hype. Troy Deeney is back in form for Watford. And if you're looking at these teams, like Lacadia is another suggestion on Brighton. Talk about Barnes, Lacadia, Deeney. Watford is probably...
They all suck. Yeah, give me a break. if you want a replacement that offers you any... Either you change your formation and you go down to like a 4.5 mid, like or 4.5 forward like Kamara, or... I don't even know. Like, that's pretty much it, right? Isaac Success, right? I think did he score today? I think he might have scored for Watford. I know he started anyway. If you can, you go that route, or you just have to spend an extra million, right? And you just have to, you could bring in Jimenez, right? I mean, Jimenez is only, 0.8 more, 6.4 million, great value, great fixtures. If you can get like 1.5 million more, then you could bring in Marcus Rashford. Again, excellent fixtures, maybe outside of the Spurs game, but excellent fixtures, in great form. He's on free kicks, apparently. At least he was until Alexis Sanchez came back. Even Marko Arnautović, right? 6.9 million. Just I would rather get the more expensive player that is going to offer something like consistent returns. I mean, the problem with Danny Ings is he's a good player, but he can't stay healthy. He just can't do it, yeah. Right? You can't go more than two game weeks without pulling up. And probably actually that's kind of Arnie's problem as well. And there's all this talk about how they were being overly cautious by subbing him in the 20th minute. But the reality is they're overly cautious because this guy can't stay healthy. And it's the same thing with Ings. So if you want to play a third forward, if you're going to play a three person front line, then you're just going to have to bring in someone who costs more than 6 million. And there's just no good alternatives under 6 million.
Yeah, I agree. There's no easy answer to this in terms of a budget guy, because it's just all a crapshoot. FPL President asks, Everton haven't done well lately, but still have good fixtures over the next five. Richarlison, Siggy, Dean, buy, sell, hold. So we're both Dean owners, Josh, and you were mentioning earlier, it would be nice to get something from Dean that isn't a worldy. maybe just a freaking clean exactly. sheet once in a while.
Just one. I know. Honestly, I don't really know why they can't do it. I mean, it's the central defenders have been letting them down, but they're good players. You know, they're good dogs, Brandon. It's just like, I don't know what the deal is here.
Yeah.
You've got Keane and Zuma and Mina.
Pickford and goal.
It's like Pickford and goal, Colm. It feels like they haven't got enough reps or something. It's like they need to play the same defense just settle on a back four and then just play them consistently for a few weeks. I guess they're kind of doing three at the back for a while too, right? But I don't really know if that was working. I mean, they've lost the last two matches. So I don't know. I think it's actually shifted the formation a few times. So I don't know. I'm holding the faith with Dean. I actually think that Richarlison is a player who's a little under the radar right now. Yeah. I thought that he blanked in the last two matches. And if all you're doing is looking at those two blanks and you didn't watch those matches, you may not know that he should have like three goals mm-hmm. in the last two games. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he absolutely should have scored in that Brighton match. Had an amazing chance at the end of the Leicester match, right? Like, should have been a goal right near the end of that game. So I don't know. I feel pretty good about him, and he keeps dropping in value. You know, by his standards.
This is not the first time that Richarlison has done this. He did this last season at Watford, where he came out early season, was banging him in, looked really great, and just disappeared in the second half of the season. I mean, he's obviously a young, talented player, and he's growing. And
right,
but
what I'm saying is, I think that's the narrative that seems to be building here. But I'm saying that he has actually been really consistent for most of the season. He's got 9 goals on the year, and he scored 3 in 5 matches before these last two blanks. And he really should have scored in these matches. And I feel like last year when he was at Watford, he was pouting, he was drifting out of matches. I mean, he ultimately started coming off the bench because he just couldn't be trusted. I just don't think that's the player that we're seeing this year, you know? So I don't know. I am very much in favor of Richarlison as a player to buy, even though there might be a blank coming up for Everton. I think game week 27, I think it's fine to bring someone in, even if you only can play them for 5 weeks and you're going to drop him shortly thereafter.
Yeah.
I think he's a sneaky captain option at home this week to Bournemouth too.
I think he's, he's honestly on my short list of transfers for Heung-Min Son. And, the reason to do that is the savings that you would make in that I don't feel like you're assuming Richarlison is able to put some attacking returns together. You're not giving up too much in terms of attack, but
the surest sign that I think that's a good transfer is I don't want you to do that transfer. Like when you mentioned that, I was like, I hope he doesn't do that because I think that's actually a really good move.
Yep.
All right. James Q says, is it time to start taking money out of our benches? A strong 15 seemed important for the Christmas period, but with the schedule returning to normal, by the way, it really didn't, right? For like the 50th consecutive season. There was really no rotation.
Much ado about nothing.
Any of these clubs. Yeah. I think we all had to dig one spot into our bench a couple times. But with the schedule returning to normal, should we go budget on the bench, and invest the money into the first team? If so, who are your favorite enablers? Well, we talked about Jason Puncheon earlier. Obviously, I think that the fourth and fifth defensive spots are a great spot to find some enablers. I think that Wan-Bissaka is still very decent value, right? I think he is, 4.4 million now, so still pretty cheap, right? I mean, cheaper than a 4.5 million defender, pretty good.
Yeah, him and Johnny at Wolverhampton, who's still 4.3, I think is great, and Bennett still, who's moving up in value. You know, I'm not going to suggest that you want to play both Wolves defenders at once because they've been having trouble keeping clean sheets. But these are guys who are guaranteed minutes that you can sit on your bench for cheap money, and you know they're going to play. And that's really the point. And that's I agree with James, and I'm not sure that we changed our thinking going into the festive period where we had to get all-star players on our bench. Who can even afford that? But I think it's the right move to look for the cheapest possible playing option on various teams just to pad your bench.
Yeah, I brought in Kiko Femenia to fund a Paul Pogba move a few weeks back. And he didn't start once when I planned to start him, but he's only 4.2 million. I think he's pretty stable in that squad. I guess it's an open question whether you can get any clean sheets out of Wofford's defense. You know, you might be better off just spending $4.8 million on Holobas. But if you're not going to play them at all anyway, right, if you're only going to play them once every five game weeks or something, then sure, I think he's fine at $4.2 million.
Yeah, I think if you have the money, bringing in a guy like David Brooks for Bournemouth is the exact type of player that...
The wonderful David Brooks. Yeah, it's true. He's a Spanish legend in the making. I'm a big fan of him. All right, Brandon, next question. Ben Miller says, Ben Millar says, how bad is it taking hits at this point in the season to chase points?
I don't think it's, did we talk about this a little bit last episode where I was a little more bullish on burning points here or there in lieu of playing your second half of the season wild card? I think.
Yes.
I think it's...
I argued the other side.
Yeah, of it. But I do think it's worth taking a very indiscriminate look at your team. Where is your team now and where do you want it to be, say, next game week, two, three game weeks from now? And what do you need to do to get there? And if you feel like you're a little behind and there is a way to get exactly where you want to be by taking a minus four over the course of... 2 or 3 weeks, maybe even a minus eight, I'm fine with that. On the whole,
yeah.
Though I do agree, best practices, SOP, standard operating procedure, do not burn points. It is a very difficult thing to have come off, particularly in the short term. But if you're applying this to a long-term strategy, I can't say no.
Right, but if you're looking long-term, then you can usually do it without burning points. You know, you can just make moves that are geared towards freeing up cash to make those without. I don't know. But I mean, I do hear what you're saying. I agree with you. I think in general, unless you're dealing with an injury crisis, I don't think burning points is the way to go. I've made fewer points hits than I ever have this season. And I feel like I've made like a full conversion to not burning four and just staying with players, even when they have bad fixtures, even when they have a bad run, as long as you feel like you've got someone who's reasonably who's reasonably accepted to start and who is reasonably talented, you know, and if they have those two things going for them, then I think, you know, even if you want to transfer them out at some point, I would rather wait and do it with a free transfer. So
I'm looking at my transfer history now, and I have five game weeks in which I made zero transfers. I have two game weeks in which I burned four. It's interesting, but those two game weeks have both come in the last five game weeks. So I think I did find myself a little bit in a hole that I needed to dig myself out of. And maybe it, by virtue of me panicking, I ended up burning four in game week 17, four again in game week 19. I don't know. I'm looking at my squad and I feel like it did me some favors.
Yeah, the game week 19 one, I think more so. I mean, it's not like it never works. I just think it's risky, you know, and it often doesn't come off. You know, it's a big gamble, and I prefer not to do it if I can avoid it. So, all right, final question, Brandon, comes from FPL Govna. It says, if you're trying to catch up rank, is it worth considering differentials for each position, or do you go for the most owned players in the game instead?
This question comes up a lot, and I find it to be really interesting. Because it comes up a lot because people are often thinking about what do I have to do to catch up? And I think the answer that we both ultimately settle upon is don't get caught up in differentials. What you need to do is focus on the players that are good, the players that are in form. And even if other people that you're trying to catch have them, you need them just to keep pace. Where you'll make your differential is on the margins. Your fourth midfielder, your third striker, and you know, don't get worried if your marginal differentials aren't working week to week. What you need them to do is do something for you like once every 6 weeks, and that's how you're going to catch up by game week 38.
I also think the other side of that is true. I don't really worry about ownership either until a player maybe gets above 50% ownership. You know. Even someone like Hazard, you know, his ownership is pretty high right now. It's even higher in the top 10K, but it's still not so high that, you know, everyone in the fantasy land is going to jump past me. It's at 38%. I think Mo Salah is a player whose ownership is, you know, is he's at 42%. I guess, I don't know, maybe, I don't know. I don't actually have a number in my head that's like, what's a cutoff for being so highly owned that I have to have them. I mean, I feel like Sergio Aguero around game week 5 or 6.
75%.
Yeah, like 50% though, right? If a player is 50% owned, I'm starting to feel a lot of pressure to have them in my team. Now, I don't want to view it that way, because mm-hmm. if a player is owned that high, it means that there is a player who is, I mean, it's not like, you know, a player's not going to blank for 5 game weeks in a row and be over 50% of the league. You know, it's like to get that high, you've already got to be pretty established. You've got to be one of the biggest clubs. You know, you've got to be, you know, which just kind of gives you like a built-in high ownership percentage. That's why Man United's players are always super highly owned, even when they're having bad seasons. You know, well, so
funny
I think
thing,
that,
Wayne Rooney is actually at 50% ownership right now in the game.
It's a rune pick. That's exactly my point, Brandon. So, yeah, I think that, I mean, what about you? Do you think about ownership like when you make a transfer?
Yeah. I mean, Sané was an interesting example that you brought up earlier, who's knocking on the door of 10% ownership, which is kind of insane for a player that's been in such great form recently. The thing, ownership just kills you on those particular game weeks where you don't have Salah and he's captained by everyone who does, and he gets a hat trick. And that just buries your rank. And those are like the emotional hurdles I find really difficult to get over.
I actually think you raise a great point here, Brandon, which is that it matters more in a season where there are fewer captain options, right? So Eden Hazard would be a player that I'd be absolutely terrified not to have if I thought that everyone and their mother was going to captain him this game week. But I think coming off 2 blanks in a row, I think it's going to be very hard for a lot of people to go ahead and captain him.
Yeah.
I'm sure you feel the same way,
yeah.
You know, and I think a lot of people do. And so if a player is highly owned, but they're not being captained, then I feel like I can handle that hit. You know, I mean, even if he gets 13 points or something, like that's a, you know, I mean, it's not like I have 0 to 13, like in theory, someone like Paul Pogba can maybe get close to that, you know? Yeah. But it's when they're all getting captained and it's 26 points, you know, that it really starts to hurt you. So, but you know, this season there's just so many different captain options that I think that it's not as much of a concern.
Well, the lightning round clock on this question is at 28 seconds. So do you have anything left that you want to say about differentials?
No, I think we've given it our all. Brandon, game week 22. Should we talk about that briefly?
Yeah.
It starts on Saturday.
You talk about January the FA 12th. Cup. You talk about the FA Cup break like it's this epic international break level time off. We've really earned it after a hectic festive fixture. But frankly, I still don't feel like we've had a break. So this is game week 22 swiftly upon us.
I feel the same way. It like does not, yeah. You know, it barely feels like a break, especially because there's matches on a weekend too. So yeah. It doesn't feel like we've had a huge break. Although it's been kind of nice to have matches on, just sort of pleasantly. I haven't watched a single one of them.
Yeah.
I've just been sort of pleasantly tracking them on ESPN and the conversation on social media. I'm like, oh, that's nice. You know, sure. It's nice that this is all happening. And there's been a bunch of upsets today. That's kind of fun.
Yeah.
So Brandon, that does bring us to game week 22. Who do you see as your captain going into this game week? Just to get that out of the way.
Yeah, first dilemma I see is captaincy, because one of the most appealing options is West Ham Arsenal, Aubameyang, even though he's away from home. The problem is it's the first kickoff of the game week, and everyone hates captaining the first kickoff of the game week because that could definitely ruin your day, your whole weekend.
Sure.
But Arsenal does really jump out. Chelsea at home to Newcastle. You're talking about Hazard. People being scared off captaining Hazard because he's blanked 2 weeks in a row. This will be the ultimate test for Hazard owners. Can you resist, or do you have the guts to captain Hazard?
So on your bus, if you get hit by a bus tomorrow, Brandon, who is your bus team captain?
Yeah, bus team as registered trademark and originated on the Always Cheating podcast. Never forget that. On my bus,
that's true.
On my bus team.
We should just make that our Twitter bio, right? We came up with the term bus team.
Yeah. Which is kind of amazing that we came up with that, because neither of us, truth be told, have ever been hit by a bus, believe it or not. But
I'd never even seen a bus.
Yeah.
I don't even know what they
look
like.
What is bus?
That's that extreme.
My bus team currently, the armband is on Aubameyang. And my vice captain is Eden Hazard.
Interesting. Okay. Wow. My captain is on Mo Salah, and my vice captain is on Leroy Sané. So
wow,
that's a real spread on the
podcast.
That's what I'm saying. There's a huge spread this year. I think Harry Kane at home to Man United is a perfectly viable captain option. I think that Aubameyang is as well. I guess that's it. I guess I feel like I have four captain options. I wouldn't captain Pogba way to Spurs.
Pogba.
I've got David Brooks. I think that you could make a case. I just think Salah, I don't think he'll play. I guess it depends on if he plays tomorrow away to Wolves. I can't remember if they're away or home to Wolves in the FA Cup. But I think he'll get a rest. I don't know why you'd play him in that match.
No.
Honestly, I just feel like this is like a match where Liverpool could secretly maybe they lose, you know, like who cares? I mean, they're fighting for the Champions League and the league this year, you know? So I don't know, like they don't have the Man City level squad depth where they can just fight for four cups this year. So I would love to see a Klopp play like a third, a C team, on Monday.
Yeah.
I just love Salah's form and, the Amex, its reputation for being a difficult stadium, I think has been a little overblown. They've kept one clean sheet in the last 10 or 11 matches.
We were present for one of those clean sheets, Josh.
That is true. That is true. The famous Glenn Murray game. So, I don't know. I think, I just really trust him right now. And I don't have like a clear sense of who the best captain is. So when in doubt, I just want to captain the best player. And that's Mo Salah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's sensible logic. I mean, I don't know why I haven't really considered Salah in my thinking, but there you go. There is definitely a chance for me to get buried.
Yeah.
So, I mean, let's talk about this a little bit more, though. Aubameyang, convince me to switch off of Aubameyang.
I just made a very compelling case for Salah, but I'm not going to do it again.
Okay, yeah, so let me rephrase. Don't convince me to go Mo Salah. Why? Mm-hmm. Why not Aubameyang?
Well, to me, it's just who's the best. I mean, you know, Sané is my vice there, just because. I mean, I think he's probably going to play in the League Cup at midweek, but they don't actually play until Monday. They play Wolves on Monday, January 14th. So plenty of time for him to rest in that match. And I just, I mean, anytime you can have a Man City player at home, for me, it's just a process of elimination thing. I think it's less about Aubameyang and more about having other options I like more. It makes complete sense to play him as well. I think maybe because it is that early match, it sort of throws me off a little bit. Although I said before, you know, when Salah got the hat trick away to Bournemouth, I mean, the beauty of captaining a player in that early fixture is if they do well, then you get to sort of just sit back for the next two or three days and just enjoy the matches because you've just nailed the most important, you know, part of your team that week.
I'm thinking I might go Hazard here.
Okay. Wow.
All right, I'm changing my bus team. Changing my bus team here on the pod.
Okay.
Just for the heck of it. Of course, this is not as exciting as somebody like making a live substitution on a podcast, but
yeah. Remember how I said before that when you were talking about bringing up Charleston, I was like, I hope you don't do that. Uh-huh. When you said that you were switching the captaincy to Hazard, I was like, yes, I'm glad he's doing that. So take from that what you will. All right,
it's going to be a wild one. I really don't know what to make of game week 22. I think it's we just had a heck of a lot of fun with the festive fixtures culminating in just the most epic match of the season with City and Liverpool. There's no way that game week 22 isn't nothing but a letdown.
Thankfully, we had the FA Cup to break things up a little bit, so it wasn't like it didn't lead right into it. It's going to feel like you said, it's like half an international break.
Before we go, Josh, you promised a very boring transfer that you're considering making, a goalkeeper transfer. Let's talk about that.
Well, I'm considering a move to bring in Roberto Firmino, possibly. I don't know. I really don't want to do it. I don't want to drop Aubameyang. And so I want someone to get injured or something, you know. I have these two transfers.
Somebody else to make the decision for you.
Exactly. So I think right now I look at my team and I have two issues. One is David Brooks, who I like, but now that I'm looking ahead at Bournemouth's fixtures, I'm just a little worried about whether I can get enough from him if I might have to start him every single game week. And so the way to make him into a better player would be to downgrade Aubameyang into Firmino, and then that would free up $2 million, and then I could move Brooks to someone like Richarlison. The other problem I have is I really don't like either of my goalkeepers this weekend, and I feel like I've been wanting to dump Fabianski for a while. I think a lot of people who have Fabianski feel that way. And he's not even racking up like quite enough saves to make up for the fact that they just can't keep clean sheets. So I'm considering, because I have these two transfers, just burning one transfer this weekend, a goalkeeper transfer, and then saving two for next week's podcast. But you know, that just opens the question of which goalkeeper would I want? It's Angus Gunn is sort of tempting at Southampton. I'll have Jimenez, so it doesn't need to be in every game week person anyway. Yeah, Goita is possibly an option there as well. They have a pretty decent run of fixtures. I do think that Goita keeps his spot over Hennessy. I mean, they brought him in last summer to be the starter. I just don't think he'd earn the spot. It's kind of like Bern Leno, you know? So, I don't know. I don't know who I would want as a rotatable keeper. I guess you could bring in Button for a couple of weeks. I don't know. There's just like, you know.
what a ridiculous keeper name. Oh, Button.
The other option, I guess, would be to just hold off on that, turn a bombing into Firmino after this game week, and then upgrade one of my keepers into Allison. That might be actually the way to do it. So I don't know. We'll see. It's just, I have to decide whether I want to drop a bombing or not. I don't really want to, but I just have to decide whether Brooks can be good enough to hold on to, you know? And if so, then I guess I'm willing to just throw away a transfer possibly.
You hear that, Brooks? The pressure's on.
Yeah, exactly. Or move Hoiberg to Punchin or something to free up a little extra money.
Yeah, I'm looking. The next move I want to make is Son out for another midfielder. So I think I'm going to keep Son for game week 22, roll my transfer, and then do a little bit of surgery in game week 23.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, Brendan, that's the podcast. I'm getting knocked on the door here, so I gotta wrap this thing up.
Let's wrap it up.
You can become a patron, support the podcast at patreon.com/alwayscheating. As we mentioned, we have a new podcast series for patrons. We also have a second half league. We have our suicide league, which is down to its final 10 going into this upcoming game week, Brendan. So that is pretty exciting. Yeah. We have a lot of producer thank yous. I'm going to try to read through them. I'm not going to read through them quickly, but I'm going to give them the respect they deserve. If I happen to be reading them quickly, it's because I talk quickly myself. Okay. Mike DiPietro, Stephen Toomey, Sam Streak, Jacob Roberts, Nick Costello, Carl Rasmus, Lindy Granley, Chris Howell, Rafai Khan, Martin Savage, Rick Brailford, Jim Payne, Adam Benjamin, Max Chamberlain, Brian T, Trevor Ingerson, Chris Carter, DeBig Gaffer, Danny Evans, Babas Kuhn, Tor Furland, Jeff Hoosby, Ben Grant, and James Holland. Thank you to all of our producers, Brendan. We're going to have to figure out how to read those moving forward.
We're going to have to get the Micro Machine Man in here.
Thank you so much moving forward, especially to Danny Evans, Babas Kuhn, Tor Furland, Jeff Hoosby, Ben Grant, and James Holland, who have just become producers in the last two game weeks. It's very much appreciated.
That's got to be Jeff Hoosby. That's got to be Jeff Hoosby. He's from my old stomping grounds in Metro Detroit. That's a very Midwestern pronunciation, Hoosby.
Yeah, I guess I was thinking of John Houston. You know, that's where I was going with the Hoosby. Okay. Brendan, where can people subscribe to the podcast?
Yeah, if you're listening to the podcast, you're not already subscribed, find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, Acast, wherever it is that you get your podcast. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes if you'd be so kind. That does help the pod. Follow us on Twitter at Hail Cheaters, Instagram at Hail Cheaters, Facebook at Always Cheating. Send us an email if you have lengthier questions or just want to keep it private. Down low. HailCheaters@gmail.com. For all this information and more, just visit alwayscheating.com.
Yep, and good luck to everybody this game week. We will be back with a new podcast. I guess we'll do it after the Man City Wolves game, right? That game is too big to do a podcast before. So
excellent. So we will see you in about 8 days, guys. And in the meantime, Poku forever.
Hail Sorloth. Maybe he'll finally get some minutes, maybe in the championship.
Wait, did he get a move?
No, but he should. He should move. He should agitate for a move to Sheffield United.
He's made my heart stop. You stopped the podcast by making my heart stop. All right. Bye, everyone.